contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Ah, yes, it's the giant head from Minneapolis. Good evening. It's Tuesday night, March 19th, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and it's 10 p.m. Central Daylight Time where I'm sitting here in Northeast Minneapolis. I am Jim Peters, and you are watching Jim Peters at Night. This is show number 98, counting at home, especially because we're taking Thursday off. Our 100th show is going to be on Monday, and we're looking forward to it. And we have a lot of people. Actually, Murray Staben is going to be our guest. And one of the reasons he's our economist friend, and one of the reasons I asked him to come on for this particular show is he was our very first guest on show number one. So I thought that would be fitting, and also it's about time we check in with him about every 6-8 weeks anyway to figure out what in God's name is going on with the economy, because God knows the Biden administration can't figure it out. So we leave it to people like Murray to help us. Now, it's exactly 10.02 p.m. here in Minneapolis. I'm not kidding about this. In 4 minutes, it's going to be the spring equinox. In other words, spring is going to start here in the central time zone in exactly 4 minutes. Now, what's funny about this is that, you know, if you watch this show at all over the last 98 episodes, I bitch and moan about winter here. You know, I like living in Minneapolis generally. The one single thing I don't like about it is the winter weather. I don't care what anybody says. It just sucks eggs. Everything you've heard bad about it is true. But this year, we didn't have winter. Honest to God, it snowed one single time. We got about 5-6 inches. It was gone and evaporated in about 5 days. So, we've had easily the warmest winter on record. And don't give me this climate change bullshit. No, it's weather, man. It's just weather, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, those of you who have also watched the show before, you know I'm a climate change denier, as the left people like to put it. No, the thing is, global warming's real. You know, I go through this like, you know, once a week, but I don't care. Patrick Moore, probably the premier, along with Michael Schellenberger, the premier climate change deniers on the planet. He was on the show in October, still the most watched episode of the show we've ever done. Several thousand people have watched it. And like he says, here's the deal. Global warming is real. That's absolutely correct. Nobody discounts that. The planet is warming up. The question is, are humans contributing to that? And the answer is, by and large, no. Maybe a little bit, you know, but no. We are not going to die because of our own folly. And also, we're not going to die anyway. The world's going to warm up. Big freaking deal. I mean, the thing is, what you have to understand here, and go back and watch the show where if you're on Rumble, you know, you'll find it if you scroll down the episode list. What was I going to say? Okay. All right. No one's denying the fact the world is warming up. It's been warming up for 300 years. The first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. And the thing is, this is what I was going to say. If you listen to Moore and a bunch of other climatologists, we're actually in a cold period right now. I mean, the Earth is relatively cold compared to what it has been on average for like 10,000 years. So at any rate, so that's what we got going on. What we have going on here in Minneapolis, we have weather. That's what it's called. It's just plain ordinary weather. But we have had the warmest winter on record. No doubt about it. Not even close. So now the funny part about this We're about, what, 1 minute away. The funny part is that is, you know, we're going to get a blizzard this weekend. That's what the funny part is. Now, the thing is, it's called the basketball playoffs snowstorm. We get it pretty much every year around the 20th of March. It's like, it just happens like clockwork all the time. And so I've been telling people, you know, I said, well, we did it in winter. Well, you just wait. we're gonna have, and yes, we're going to have apparently two storms here in the next week. So that'll be interesting. I will hate it. And it's 10:06 right now. So, yeah, that means that the sun is exactly over the equator from where we're sitting. That's what that means. It's an equinox, you know, as opposed to the solstice when the sun is exactly overhead. Yeah, what else do you want to know? Well, I'm here to tell you. That's what we're doing. So what do we got tonight? I'll tell you what we got tonight. We got Les Velez. He is the co-founder and the chairman of, I got to read this because I always forget it, the Organization of Paranormal Understanding and Support, OPUS for short, which he co-founded. He's our guest tonight. We pre-taped this afternoon. So what OPUS does is it's a support organization for people who say they've been abducted by aliens. Don't laugh. This is like, if this has happened to you, it's really, really serious shit. And that's the problem that these people have, that is, no one takes them seriously. You know, I was reading just this afternoon, this is after, I was actually reading this after we did the interview with Les, about some woman saying that, matter of fact, I think I read this on the OPUS website, and we're going to have links to all this stuff. He also wrote a book called The Unknown Other, which is just a fascinating read. Seriously, you want a good time? It's like, because you've heard stories about alien abduction. Well, these are some of the better ones. But this woman said, you know, she said that, you know, all her life she's been, you know, people taking her seriously, and then she gets abducted. And apparently in midlife, and as far as she knows, it never happened to her when she was a kid in midlife. And then she tells people about it, and all of a sudden she's crazy, you know, and that's the problem. You know, you go from being a serious person, taken seriously by other people, all of a sudden you're fucking nuts, you know, shit. It's terrible. It really is. And Les addresses this. I did ask him straight out, what percentage of the people are you treating or that come to your organization have you determined are crazy? And I don't know if he actually answered the question, but what I remember, and, you know, I'll hear this again, too, on the playback. What I remember is he said, we can tell the crazy people really quickly, that we weed them out very quickly. And that doesn't surprise me. So he's on tonight. Tomorrow night, we got the dynamic duo. That's Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from RedState.com and Jeff Meyer from Conk.com. They come on, they tag team. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Now, we had the Week from Hell last week, and Jennifer was supposed to come on alone to talk about nutrition. On my request, I asked her. She wrote an article, and we will link to this too tomorrow, to her article on Red State on nutrition. But we had to cancel her, and we also had to cancel Michael Harrison, the founder of a publisher of Talkers Magazine. He was supposed to come on with his new music video. All got completely messed up. Our website went down. It's like that started this whole thing. And then basically everything went to hell the entire week. It's like it was shot. We did shows on Monday and Thursday, and we ended up canceling on Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, we're going to play Michael's this coming Monday, as I said, is going to be our 100th show. We're going to play Michael's music video during that program. I'm hoping maybe I can get him to call in. He has surgery this coming Thursday, which is the reason we were doing it last week. So, I don't know how well he's going to be, but our guest friend of that show, Monday, our one of the show, is economist Murray Saber, and our old friend. He was a guest on our very first show, episode number one on July 31st. And also, he goes way back with me for one of the podcasts and radio shows I did at Conk News. So, we know he's an old friend of ours. And also, he answers your questions because you don't know shit about economics, do you? No, nobody does. I mean, have you ever stopped to think about this? We live in the single most capitalist country in the world, And nobody in America, nobody knows even the basics about economics. Even the freaking people in Congress don't know. I mean, first of all, we have inflation. You've noticed that, haven't you? Do you know why we have inflation? Because the Biden administration, right out of the gate in 2021, decided to print a shitload of money. And because they printed it, they basically made it up. It's worthless. And that flooded the system. And any econ major, freshman econ major, could have told them that that was going to happen. And they did. And we did. We, you know, it's like, yeah. Yeah, you go right ahead. You do that. Yeah. You know, okay. And then they're surprised. Oh, my God. How did this happen? Oh, shit. Fucking idiots. Like, God. Yeah, so, you know, the thing, I'm actually starting to think that this is actually some sort of liberal plot, that we do not teach this in high school. I don't understand why we don't. We should. I mean, money is the single most important thing in American life. And it is. I mean, come on. You have to be, you know. We can talk about philosophy. We can talk about religion. You can talk about all that stuff. We do talk about all that stuff here on the show. God bless us. We do. But when it comes down to it, you got to pay your bills, you know, and we're really, Americans, we're really good at this. We generate money. That's what we're good at. And yet we don't teach it. It's a specialty. It's kind of like writing. I mean, okay, so I'm 68 years old. It kind of bothers me that writing, plain old writing, putting words together, is now considered a specialty. I mean, when I was in school, everybody's expected to be able to do this at a reasonably competent level. Not anymore. Now you hire a writer to write shit. And meanwhile, your emails suck. And I've seen them. Don't try to fool me. Your emails suck. You can't write worth shit. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm insulting my audience. My apologies. But still, you know what I'm talking about. You know, no, basically everybody's email sucks. I reread every single email I write, even if it's only one sentence long. I'm not kidding. And even in the two sentence emails, I'm astonished how many errors I make. And I don't trust the grammar thing. The spell check thing is kind of helpful. That's kind of, but the grammar, you know, I can legitimately argue with the grammar checker on certain items. I mean, we agree to disagree, basically. You know, the freaking paperclip at Microsoft is not going to tell me how to compose my text. There, I've said it. Okay, so tomorrow, that's Jeff Meyer and Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, the dynamic duo, joining us tomorrow, Wednesday. We're taking Thursday off. Partly for just shit we got to do for the show. Monday, like I said, our 100th episode, Murray Sabrin is our guest. I'm trying to get a whole bunch of people to call in just to get for shits and giggles. You know, maybe we might have Vladimir Putin. He calls us every now and then. I don't know if you noticed that. Maybe even Cooper, the extraterrestrial, he calls us. And David from San Francisco, maybe they'll call too. We'll see. Get a few people on. Cooper hasn't called in for a little while, so... he's an extraterrestrial, so he calls in. Tuesday, the 26th, Bruce Rapuano. Now, I've been saying this guy's a physicist. I was wrong about this. He's a biologist. He's a professional biologist. He is also an alien abductee, and he wrote a book called Dominion Lost about the book's in two parts. Now, and I have to tell you, I highly recommend this book, but it's a little... Half of it is science. So basically, the book's in two parts. It's about his personal experiences, and then the second part is about the science from what he's observed and how he thinks UFOs fly and how they work, and how for example, this is not a secret. I mean, pretty much everybody who says they've been abducted, and you'll listen to Les in a few minutes. He talks about this, about the fact that. You know, everyone says, well, it's just the gray aliens. No, there's all sorts of people, and I call them people because they're people, who are abducting people. I mean, you got the list goes down kind of the common list. You got, in addition, you got the short grays, which basically, as far as anyone can tell, are biological robots. They're really not, they don't have souls, apparently. They're completely... You know, and people said they've seen them kind of deactivate too, where they basically just go to sleep. And then you got the tall grays who are running the short grays. Then you got the praying mantis types. They seem to be the big brains. Then you got the reptilians, who are kind of sort of evil. I call them, they're the real Klingons is what they are. Then you got, for lack of a better term, the tall whites. Charles Hall named them that. Nobody really knows what to call them. These people, these ETs, they look pretty much like humans, except they have really, really white skin and very, very large eyes. Not the wraparound eyes, not the gray alien almond wraparound eyes. No, they just have regular, ordinary, human-like eyes, except they're very large, to the point where something's obviously wrong. But if you slap sunglasses on these people, they can pass as human. That's the thing. You know, they just basically look like humans haven't been out in the sun for a while. And then you got the Nordics, which are pretty much exactly like humans. And then on top of that, and we spent some time talking about this. I never mentioned this before on the show. What's called MILABS. And MILABS stands for Military Abductors. Because there's a lot of people who say they've been abducted by ET who say that on these spacecraft, they run into regular, ordinary, uniformed American military personnel that are plainly, obviously not extraterrestrial. They're human. And they're in military uniforms, and that's weird. What are they doing there? You know. So we can speculate about that all we want to, and Les does. He speculates, you know. So, my career is basically built on this. My career on radio and television, that the only thing I know for certain is that American military has in its possession at least 6 and probably 9 or more crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. I know that for a certainty. And how do I know that? Government documents. And Jim says, well, if you have, you know, Freedom of Information Act, well, how come nobody reports on this? And yeah, and the answer to that question is that's a damn good question. I don't know. I've seen them. You can go look at them. Go to the blackvault.com. They're there. Go to the FBI archive website, and I don't know what the answer or the actual address of that is. The single most viewed thing on that website is the 4-page memo, and I can't remember where it was from, but it's out in the field, sent back to the home office in Washington, D.C. by some special agent, Fox Mulder type, and he says, look, we got this crashed ET spacecraft here and 4 dead aliens. What do you want us to do with them? And this is the single most viewed thing on their entire website. And the FBI says, oh, no, no, it's just a misunderstanding. That never happened. It's like, oh, yeah. So you can tell me a bunch of special agents for the FBI are standing around and they're looking at a bunch of dead bodies. And, they're not human. Yeah. They were mistaken. Yeah, sure. Tell me. Tell me your story again. All right. So here's the deal. Oh, okay. So just going on for the rest of the schedule. Oh, we don't have anybody booked for next Wednesday yet. I'm still working on that. Thursday, our old friend Jazz Shaw is coming on from hotair.com, weekend editor. He's the UFO guy for the Salem Media Properties, and he writes about conservative politics too. So we always have a lot to talk about with him. So he has the latest scoop on the UFO crap, and he has the latest scoop of the shit going on in Washington too. So it's like, that's always fascinating. Love that guy. I call him my brother from another mother. So we basically have, he is the closest thing to my gig of anybody else working on the internet. So yeah. And so, okay. So now we're taking calls here. We take calls. So this is the way this works tonight. We pre-taped the interview with Les Velez. We taped it at 3:00 in the afternoon. So we can't take calls during that time. But if you want to call in, well, now especially, but even especially after that, the third part of the show, the C block, where we basically throw, it's the junk drawer where we talk about all sorts of crazy crap. If you want to call, especially for that, after the interview, there's 3 ways you can do it. First of all, you can do it with your camera, with your webcam. And according to Talkers Magazine, we are to take video phone calls. And, yeah, we take them. And it's simple. This is the part people get. No, this is not hard to do. This is what you do. You go to, you have to go to a special webpage. You go to gymatnight.com/call. Or if you go to our website at gymatnight.com, you can go to the menu at the top that says call in. And you go to that page. There's a giant big blue button at the top of the page. You click that and you're in a preview screen where you get to check your camera and mic. Or if perchance you have more than one, you have to choose one. And you get the crap out of your teeth and comb your hair, and then you push the join button at the bottom. You end up in the video queue. It's really simple. I ask everybody who calls in. David from San Francisco, our longtime caller, he said the first time he did this, he said it was harder to find our website than to call, than actually call in. He's right. It's easier than making a FaceTime call. You can do this, you know. Okay, so there's that. Now, you can now, as of February, you can now call in via your cell phone. Like you can dial in, like on a radio show. And the number is at the bottom of the screen. And hold on just a second. I got to move some stuff. There it is. 563-999-3435. That's the number. Radio surprises with this number. We are live on Blog Talk Radio right now, audio only, and then we are live video on five other platforms. So they are, off the top of my head, YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, Trovo, and Twitch. We're no longer on Facebook because they banned our asses and they're fucking assholes. That's why. It's like, so we're not on Facebook anymore. And I still have to change the watch page on our website to reflect that. And that will be done. We'll have that done this weekend. So, and then finally, you can send me a text during the show. And this is number right here, 408-458-5088. You can text me at that number and I will get it. I have a monitor off the side here that runs those texts in real time. I do want to point out, if you're on any of the video platforms where they have chat screens, I don't look at them. And the important thing you have to understand is that you can't, if you're chatting on YouTube, they won't see you on Rumble and vice versa. So I don't look at, I just don't, I know people, you know, that a lot of hosts like to read these things while they're, I think it's rude, stupid, and boring. I don't want to watch you read something on the screen. So my compromise here is if you text in, I will get the text during the show. So that's my compromise for that. Water's good. Have you ever noticed that? Gets the job done. All righty. So that's what we got going on. We got it going on. We do. You know, it's like, you know, who the hell would have known, you know? In the news today, Donald Trump has to come up with $560 million by Monday. Otherwise, they're going to start selling off his properties. Now, why does he have to do this? Because he was found guilty of fraud in a state court in New York State. Why was he found guilty of fraud? Nobody fucking knows. Nobody was defrauded. Nobody lost a dime. It's like usually if there's fraud, you have to have a victim. So technically, I can't remember who I was talking to last week, and this popped out of my mouth, because sometimes, believe it or not, if I've had enough water and enough sleep, I'm occasionally brilliant. Basically, Trump got fined $560 million for filling out a form wrong. That's basically what it is. Now, I want to remind you of something. I'm going to read this to you. This is the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This is not an interpretation. This is the actual wording of it. The Eighth Amendment states thus, it's only one sentence. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. That's it. That's the Eighth Amendment. Now, did you hear the part? Excessive fines imposed. Now, generally, in a fraud case, the amount of punitive damages in the fine is attached to how much money is kind of relative to how much money people lost. So, in this case, how much money do people lose? Zero. Zero. Nobody lost any money. The state put the banks on the stand as hostile witnesses. And they said, oh, we'd love to do business with Donald Trump again. He makes us a lot of money. He's never defaulted on anything. You know, yeah. So you know, the state's contention is that by vastly overestimating the value of his properties, Donald Trump has defrauded the state. That's their thing. Now, the amazing thing is in the valuations that the court has put on the properties, they're way, way low. Like the court estimated that Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida is worth $18 million, where if I'm right, the current valuation based on market value is about $1.6 billion. You can't make this shit up. There's empty lots near Mar-a-Lago, like 2-acre lots going for $500 million. This is how valuable this real estate is. So nobody disputes this except the court because they hate Donald Trump. So the idea here is they're going to try to either bankrupt him and or tie him up in all this legal bullshit so that he can't campaign. This is great. Yeah. Well, I think they do this in Venezuela, I think. It's fantastic. You know, now whether you like Donald Trump or not, this is bullshit. This is really, really terrible. They are weaponizing the law to keep somebody from running for president. And like I said, this is it's basically a made-up charge, and I hate to use the term trumped up, but it is. No one has ever, I can't stress this enough, no one in the history of New York State or the United States of America has ever been brought into on this charge. No one. No one. Like I said, he's getting fined $500 million for filling a form out wrong, basically. That's basically what it comes down to. It's just scary shit. It's just totally scary shit. I got to admit, I look at Letitia James, and I'm not saying this. I don't say this lightly. I mean, I can tell you that Joe Biden's incompetent, and I also tell you he's a nasty human being, and he is. I mean, he's at some campaign stop. Was it in Colorado today or Arizona? I can't remember. And there's a little girl. And first of all, you know, I got to backtrack. Because I'm the one who's been talking about this for 3-4 years. You go way, way back. You know, why do I think they cheated the 2020 election? Here's my evidence. I have no proof, but I have evidence. And my evidence is the number of people who showed up at campaign events for Joe Biden. Now, I spent my entire career in the entertainment business in some fashion or another. And I've been dealing with crowds, quote unquote, audiences, right? I don't know if you know this, and I'm not pulling this out of my butt. I kept track on this, that, and other people did too. You can find this corroborated in other places. Other than one campaign stop in 2020, 5 days before the 2020 election in Pennsylvania, where Joe Biden drew 900 people, other than that, he never drew more than 200 people to any campaign event during the entire campaign. Now, and I'm being generous, because there were so few people at most of these gatherings that the press couldn't tell who was the staff, who was the press, and who was the actual people who came there to hear him. They couldn't. That's how few people there were, with one exception. I don't know how many events they did. I really don't know. But 80, 100, you know, there's only one exception. And 900 people even isn't even that much. I mean, during the 2016 campaign, I kept track of this, too, because this stuff kind of fascinates me. I'm always fascinated by who comes out to see who. You know, during the 2016 campaign, Hillary Clinton drew an average of 1,500 people at every campaign event. Now, that's not a lot, but it's in a reasonable range. You know, that's the thing. Okay, 1,500 people. And Trump, of course, was drawing about 10 to 20,000. And the real amazing thing is, You know, the Trump people don't like to talk about this, but I think I can very fairly comfortably say this. Until a day before the election, they thought they were going to lose. And you know what happened the day before the election? They did a campaign stop in Seattle, or actually it was Washington State. It might have been Tacoma. I don't know if it was actually in Seattle. It was in Washington State. And they are flying back to Washington for the election results, for Election Day. And apparently Trump himself says to somebody on the airplane, what are we going over on the way home? And they said, well, Minneapolis. He said, let's make some calls. Let's do one more stop. So at 10 p.m. Central Time, excuse me, I better get some water here. 10 p.m. Central Time, the Trump campaign calls the local talk radio stations here in town, and they announce the fact that they arrange with the airport that they're going to do a campaign stop at 3 o'clock in the morning, at 5 hours from then. So 5 hours notice. Now, on top of that, it's pouring rain. We just a huge storm. It's pouring rain here in Minneapolis. So they announce and the talk radio stations announce it at 10 p.m. that night. Then in 5 hours at 3 a.m., Trump is going to do one more stop in Minneapolis in an airplane hangar at the airport. Now, and who the fuck can find shit at the airport when you're driving around, you know? Okay, 5 hours notice. At 3 a.m., 26,000 people showed up. And even the Trump people were astonished. And supposedly, that's when they first realized, well, holy shit, something maybe is happening here, you know? And so I go off the same thing. You can tell crowd sizes and enthusiasms about how momentum is going. And Biden had none, and still doesn't. I mean, somebody, you know, they're mentioning this on Hot Air and Red State on the Salem Meeting Properties today. They were talking about this, about the fact that at the stop, I cannot remember off the top of my head. Well, I did not take notes on this, whether it was in Arizona or Colorado. There was about 50 people. And Joe has been going to these quote-unquote campaign stops where about 50 people are showing up. Now, even since he's been president, nobody's showing up to see this guy speak. Nobody. And I'm not even talking about these stops. I'm talking about regular, presidential events. They don't like people talking about this. In Lancaster, Louisiana, in October of 21, the president did a stop to give a speech, and nobody showed up. Nobody. Zero. Nobody showed up. This is crazy shit. He's the president of the United States. When he stopped at colleges and stuff, he stopped at Ohio State University, 30 people showed up. Like, this is absolutely nuts. So you're going to tell me, and, you know, people mention this, there's memes constantly online about this, about the fact, you're going to tell me this guy who can't draw a crowd anywhere got 81 million votes. Yeah. Right. Now, my friend Tim Conaway, who thinks I'm nuts here, that's fine, because like I said, I have evidence, but I don't have any proof at all. I don't. You know, he says, well, you have to understand, nobody voted for Biden. They all voted against Trump. But everybody, 95% of the people voted for Biden actually voted against Trump. You know, and a good liberal friend of mine, uber liberal friend, he says, well, I have to say, if Biden came to town, I want to go hear him talk. But everybody, nobody's going to go hear him talk. It's like, what the hell? There's 3.5 million people in the city. Nobody's going to show up. How did I even get started on this about the fact that, oh yeah. So anyway, they're going to, you know, their plan, they're going to keep Trump in court or running around trying to get a bank loan or something. But at any rate, on Monday, Letitia, oh, I know what it was. So I'm getting back. But, you know, I can say Biden is incompetent, and I can even say that he's a despicable, nasty human man. And the reason I brought that up is because at this campaign stop today, apparently he made a beeline for the 11-year-old girl in the room. And, I mean, the guy's a pervert. There's just no doubt about it, you know. And he's talking to this girl and trying to touch her, and she's pulling away. And this happens pretty much at every one of these stops, you know. Now, if you're a parent and you're letting the president of the United States talk to your kid, you're nuts. I mean, this is, you know, people have joked about this, and I've joked about this, but it's becoming increasingly obvious to me that he actually does have a thing for really, really young girls. That's my opinion, but still. I've only come to that conclusion relatively recently. You know, I used to think, oh, he just likes kids and he comes off as a creepy old man. No, he actually is a creepy old man. But, yeah, so, Yeah, that was my point. You know, so he's still doing this shit. He's doing this shit. 50 people show up. He makes a beeline to an 11-year-old girl. You know, I mean, God, it's like, have we seen enough of this president? I mean, this is embarrassing. And so I'm watching Gutfeld last night, and Kennedy's on, and Kennedy said, you know, at this point, you really have to conclude that this guy is just completely, the only reason he's in this is for power, is for his own self-aggrandizement. Because if he cared about the country, hell, if he cared about his party, if he cared about the Democratic Party, he'd step aside and let somebody else run. I mean, there's no, it's plainly obvious he's not going to make it through his second term if he gets one. He won't. He'll either die or he'll end up literally infirm. It's like the movie Dave. They'll have to get a double and prop somebody up. I mean, that's the only way they can do this. If this guy really cared both about the country and the Democratic Party, he would step aside. But nope, he's not going to do that, you know, because he's the only person going to beat Donald Trump. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, you know, he's getting really pissed off about the fact that people aren't recognizing his accomplishments. They are what? Huh? This is the most incompetent presidential administration in history. Bill O'Reilly said this on his nightly newscast about a week ago, but I've been saying it for months. And he said he said the exact same thing I've been saying, that next to James Buchanan, who will probably never be beat as the worst president ever, Biden's going to come in second. He is. And God bless Jimmy Carter, because he's pretty much made people forget about Carter at this point. And that's a real, complicated thing, you know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Jimmy Carter was a good president. Or let me put it a better way. His presidency did not go well. That's a better way to put it. You know, he was probably a good, well-meaning man and smart as hell. And he had, on paper, he had probably had the perfect resume for being president, but it did not work out. But I've said this before, having lived through that, the one thing about Carter that's completely different than Biden is that Carter publicly recognized that things weren't going well. He was constantly asking people, what can we do? You know, I mean, he gave these fireside chats where he talked about, you know, gas went through the roof and inflation or interest rates were at 21%. I mean, it was really a disaster, but he was constantly trying to address it. Biden won't acknowledge that any of this shit's happening. And in his mind, you know, we're the idiots. We can't figure out how good a job he's doing, you know. All right, folks. I tell you what. We're going to play the interview with Les Velez. When we come back, you know, you can call me at 563-999-3435. Or you can show up on video at jimandnight.com/call afterwards. This is Les Velez. He is the chairman and co-founder of the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. That's what they do. Here we go. Joining us from his office in Texas, Les Velez, the co-chairman and founder of I want to make sure I get this right, Les. The Organization for Paranormal Understanding Support, OPUS. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Okay,
Thank you.
let me ask you, how did you end up founding this organization?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a lengthy one, actually.
Go ahead.
Oh, perfect. It goes back to when I was 11 years old, believe it or not. I was living in Connecticut at the time, and I was coming into the house after feeding my dog. It was just early evening in late October, and I looked to my right, and here's this object. Slowly moving over the treetops, totally silent, self-illuminated, sort of oval in its shape.
Is this during the day?
No, it was early evening.
Uh-huh.
And So it scared the hell out of me. And I ran into the house and finally got my father to come out. And by the time he did, it was gone. And he said, well, it's probably just a beacon. And I didn't buy that. And shortly thereafter, I decided to go to the library and try to analyze or to research UFOs.
Les, what year was this?
This was year 1958.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And so I picked up a couple of books back in those days. George Adamski was the prominent ufologist, if you will.
Yeah.
And put out a number of books on the topic and had incredible pictures that he had taken through his telescope. And I really got pumped about it and was really into it for a while.
Hey, but, do you mind if I ask you really quick?
Sure.
So for many years, Adamski was basically kind of considered a fraud, but his reputation has kind of sort of repaired itself over time. There's a lot of people now kind of say maybe some of he was maybe actually serious, you know? What do you think about it in retrospect?
Yeah, I definitely believe that. And I remember going through that period of time where people were looking down upon him, you know, that he was just a crackpot or things like that.
Yeah,
but
right.
So many people that were around him that also saw some of the same things that he saw came out. And there's a group now, a gentleman, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, who basically has been going around the country exhibiting and talking about, you know, George and his sightings and the evidence that he has that basically seems to prove that he was totally legitimate.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm in that camp now, believing that whatever he did come up was for real.
I'm fast-forwarding way ahead here, and I'm wondering what about your personal experience on this. Do you think the government went out to actually like disparage him? Do you think there was an organized campaign on that?
Oh, I definitely believe that the government has been suppressing any information and you know, they have a major campaign to characterize these people as kooks so that they wouldn't look further and try to discover more information on the topic. And so we've had a situation for years and years, which is still going on to this day. Uh-oh, what happened? Oh, there we go. every once in a while, on this particular platform, it'll just blank out. I don't know why that's the case, but as long as I move my mouse, I'm in good shape.
it's all magic, Les.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, so getting back to how did you actually end up starting the organization then?
Yes.
You're the co-founder. I couldn't find any information of who the other founder was.
Yeah, the other was a doctor friend of mine by the name of Eugene Lipson, who has since passed away. But he was instrumental in helping me put this whole thing together. So anyway, fast forward. I kind of forgot about the whole UFO thing for a while, and I went off to college, got involved with the ROTC program, the Army ROTC program at the University of Vermont, and so I had a commitment, but before I went off to the Army artillery branch, as it turned out, I got married, and So I spent 6 years total involved with the military, and we eventually moved out to California in 1985 from Connecticut.
Are you still in the military then?
No, I'm retired out of there.
Right.
And so I picked up the San Jose Mercury News, as it was called back in those days. It's now called the Mercury News. And there was an article about Stanton Freeman, this nuclear physicist that was coming to San Jose City College to talk about UFOs and the government cover-up. So that was like threw a switch for me. I was like, oh, my goodness, I got to go see this guy. So I did. I went to San Jose City College expecting to see a handful of people there, but the auditorium was packed. He gave this incredible presentation. And on my way out, there was a table set up by MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, that was established in 1969 to better understand the UFO phenomenon. And so they produce a monthly journal. And I decided, well, I'll get that journal and, you know, see what I can glean from their articles. And I did that for a while, but after a while, it wasn't enough for me. And so I decided that I needed to get more involved. And one way that I did get involved was to become a field investigator. They had a training course that they produced. And so I did that, took the test, passed it, and started to get involved with cases. Well, I remember the first case that I got involved with, it was not just a sighting of an object, but people were telling me that they had contact with these non-human intelligences. And I remember my reaction to that. I was quite skeptical. I was a very much a nuts and bolts kind of a guy.
Right.
And so, but then almost without exception, the rest of the cases I got involved with were also the same scenario where people were saying, I saw something, but then I had missing time. I think I was abducted, you know, and so they were telling me very similar stories. And so I said to myself, there seems to be a real issue going on here. There's something definitely seeming to be happening. A lot of times these people had gone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist because they were afraid they were going crazy. And so they found out, however, that they did not have a psychopathology. They were sane. But something was still going on with them. So one day, this particular person I was involved with said, do I know of other people having similar experiences? And I said, yes, I do. So the next thing I'm doing, I'm facilitating a support group in my office in San Jose.
And what is it now, about early 90s now?
Yes, yes, that's right, early 90s. Okay, so... that's when things really got interesting because these people were telling me incredible stories about their experiences. So I started to learn so much more about the phenomena. So one day I get a call from the international director of MUFON saying that a reporter in the area was looking to talk to someone about UFOs and investigations and things of that nature. So he asked me if I could, if he could give the reporter my contact information. So I said, sure. And the reporter came out and I had a nice conversation with him. He wrote up a beautiful article in the Monterey Coast Weekly paper. And so shortly thereafter, I get a call from a woman that had seen the article. And she said, I'd like to understand what's going on with my brain waves when I'm in contact with these off-earthly entities. And I'm saying to myself, I have no way to know or how to help a person like that. You know, I just didn't have any possible way to do it.
Hey, Les, let me stop it for just a second.
Yeah.
Has it occurred to you, if anybody's been called to do this, it's you. You know, that's not the type of call people get on a normal basis, you know?
No, that is true. That is true. So once you're in here, it's hard to get out.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's all right. So anyway, then she started to tell me about the fact that she's working with an emergency room doctor down in Carmel, where she is from. And that triggered something in me because my doctor friend, Dr. Eugene Lipson, was interested in meeting other doctors that were interested in the phenomena. So I called him up and I said, Gene, let's go down there and at least you can meet the doctor and I can talk to this lady and we can see what's going on with her. So we did. We went down one Saturday afternoon. And as we entered her home, there was a picture on the wall. And she's standing on the back of a rather large boat. It looks like crystal clear blue waters. And I'm saying, what's this picture all about? And she says, well, I was helping these treasure hunters down in the Caribbean. And I said, well, how were you doing that? She says, well, I was in contact with the captain of the galleon that had gone down. Well, that started the afternoon off with a bang, so to speak. We subsequently found out that after a near-death experience that she had, she became extremely psychic and started to communicate with these other entities. And so
these aren't necessarily extraterrestrial. They're other humans or dead humans or.
Well, in that case, yeah, she was working with a dead human.
Yeah,
but she was also in contact with other entities.
Uh-huh.
And so we spent this afternoon with her and came away that afternoon. This was like in 1993. And how can we help people like this? And that's when Opus was hatched. And then in 1994, we officially became a 501c3 nonprofit organization recognized by the IRS. And so we've been trying to help people ever since. And the way what we set up for people is, number one, we have a totally confidential online support group, which is being utilized by almost 400 people from around the world, talking to one another 24/7 about their experiences, asking questions, talking about various topics that have come into their field of knowledge and trying to share that information with people. And then the second thing we do is we have a referral network of mental health practitioners and hypnotherapists that if someone is looking for that kind of help, we can kind of point them in the right direction. And then the third thing that we've just recently come up with is a triage group called the EST, the Experiencer Support Team, which basically is a group of people that have quite a bit of knowledge in various phenomena to understand what it is that they're looking for and how we can best help them. And that's been working out quite well.
So you've been at this for 30 years now?
Yes, yes.
That's pretty incredible. Now, okay, so what do you say to my friends? I have a friend who does not, you know, he knows I do the show. He doesn't buy any of this, none
mm-hmm.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let me throw a question out. Of the 400 or so people that you're dealing with at any one time, how many of them do you think are mentally disturbed?
Well, that's the interesting point, because what we found out over the years is that most of the people do not have a psychopathology.
Yeah.
And you can spot a person that does have one.
That's why I'm asking, right? I'm sure
yeah.
you can,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
Over the years working with these people, you get a sense of the fact that they're having other issues. And so what we try to do with those people is we ask the question, have you been to a psychologist or a psychiatrist? Sometimes they'll come out, and this is an interesting fact in and of itself. They will tell us that they have schizophrenia. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And they're being medicated accordingly. They've gone to a doctor or a psychiatrist. The bottom line on this is just because you have that kind of psychopathology does not mean you're not having experiences.
Of course it doesn't. Right. That's right.
and so it gets very complicated. It gets muddied. The waters
yeah.
get muddied very quickly.
I'm sure you're familiar with John Mack. The thing I found amazing about Mack is Mack went into this trying to figure out what was wrong with all these people. He didn't, mm-hmm. you know, he just assumed the phenomena was not real. So he started talking to these people, and 200 people later, he decided, no, these people aren't making this up. This is actually happening, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So what do you tell my friend? I mean, it's like, you know?
Well, here's the thing. I think there's a conscious dissonance going on with people. I mean, most people get up in the morning, they have breakfast, they go to work, they come home in the afternoon, they have dinner, they watch a little TV. The next day, they do the same routine over and over and over
right.
again. They've had no experience, supposedly. Okay, supposedly, because I have a theory on this too, that. You know, and so it's not in their wheelhouse. It's just not there. And so you feel you're blue in the face. Matter of fact, I remember in the very beginning, I wanted to proselytize about this. You got to believe this. You know, forget it. I've
given up.
Yeah. Don't even waste your time. It's
right.
Because one day they may wake up to the fact that something did happen. And my latest theory, okay, and I'll tell you a longer story about it, is the fact that we've all had an experience, whether we consciously remember it or not. This
yeah.
is just part of how this universal process works, how our consciousness operates and things of that nature. So one day in one of the support group meetings, a person says to me, I've seen you before. Oh, really? Where? At a UFO conference? No, I saw you on board the craft. I said, really? Well, I kind of blew it off. I didn't think much about it at the time. And then it was like a year, year and a half later that someone totally different in the group says the same thing. I've seen you before. And I said, where? Same thing. UFO conference? No, no, no. You were sitting on this bench naked on board the craft and you were freaking out. And they told me to go over to you to calm you down. Well, at that point, I decided to go get regressed.
Yeah.
And because that finally triggered me to dig a little deeper.
Right.
And I did. And I had multiple past lives. But I never came up with anything along the lines of being on board a craft. However, in a subsequent conversation I had with another person later on, that perhaps this person did see you in a past life. That's where that happened. And so you didn't investigate that. So almost you need to go back into those past lives and see if you could find something along those lines. And that's why I came up with the idea is that I believe we've all had an experience. Whether we consciously recollect it or not.
Well, so now you're talking about an experience, but you're not necessarily talking about a UFO or abduction experience. You're talking. I've been reading a book by Michael Newton. Are you familiar with him?
No.
He's a psychologist. He spent a lot of time studying regressing people, and basically he fell into it, kind of like you did. About, I don't know if you're familiar with Ian Stevenson. You're familiar with him?
I've heard the name, yes.
Okay, so, he interviewed a whole bunch of hundreds and hundreds of children who said they were a previous person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in 70% of the instances, he checked out the details, and they turned out to be true.
Right.
So Newton specifically addressed what happens to people during what they've called the intermission. In other words, the space between lives. So I brought that up because that's an experience, obviously.
Right.
But what you're addressing, and I've had other people talk about this too, is for the people who say they've been abducted, in some ways, they're the ones that where something went wrong. There's a lot of people who think the vast majority of people who have been abducted have no idea whatsoever. Absolutely not. There's no clue in their life, see any missed time. They don't wake up in their bed. They're just going, like you said, they're going about their lives,
right.
But they've actually been abducted, but their memories have been completely wiped,
Right.
So if you take if you're going to go into the assumption that the people who actually do remember these experiences is a minority, you're talking about children, people.
I mean, the Roper organization did a poll back in 92 that Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and Bigelow got him, paid for.
Yeah.
And, they said there was like 6 million people in the United States that had abduction experiences.
Right.
And now fast forward in time, and this is a worldwide phenomenon, that there are millions and millions and millions of people that have had experiences, whether they consciously recollect it or not. It's a process. It's an ongoing process to raise our consciousness and to evolve us. And there's already... physical evidence of the fact that there's an evolutionary process going on. Gary Nolan from Stanford University examined a number of people with their brains, and they noticed that these people that claim that they have telepathic capabilities, psychic capabilities, have more connections between their caudate and putamen area, and that it's generational. The grandparents, the parents have this, and that they're able to find other people and they develop relationships with those kind of people that have those kind of connections. So, you and I who may not have those connections won't be around much longer. It's going to be this other generation that's going to evolve, and that's who we will be. They talk about our vibration is being raised. Well, I don't even like the term vibration. I mean, it's like, okay, so what? But it's our consciousness that's being raised. And that's...
What do you think is the point of the abductions?
Well, it's a multiple type of a thing involving multiple races.
I'm assuming at this point that they're among multiple races, that their interests are not necessarily coinciding, that they might be different.
Exactly. You got the good guys and you got the bad guys.
Yeah.
Just like we have on our planet here. We got good people and we got bad people. And the same thing is going on up there. Basically, the hybridization process is that when it gets to the fourth and fifth generation of hybridization, they look like you and I. And the precursors to that final generation are people that are working and doing things for the universe and taking samples and basically doing the grunt work that needs to be done in order to populate the universe. I just did an interview with a gentleman who is an abductee. His name is Adam Burns. You can go to my YouTube channel, Opus, separate word, Network. And his interview talks about reincarnation. It talks about the hybridization process and why that is happening. And so I tell you, these things are, you know, you have to go with your gut in a lot of cases. You know, is this something that I can actually believe is happening? With his experience, this particular gentleman, who's also written up in my book, The Unknown Other.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is he the same Adam that's in your book?
Yeah.
Because I found that maybe the most compelling story, but, you know.
Yeah, that's why I started off with it.
Yeah, right.
it was amazing. It was amazing. And so if your listeners want to see the book, it's on Amazon, Unknown Other.
We'll link to it. I didn't know you had a YouTube channel. I'll link to that, too. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. So anyway, it's fascinating. And I think that there's so much more to be learned and understood. But the fact of the matter is, are we ever going to be able to fully understand it? You know, our debunkers talk about the scientific method, and we have to be able to have a repeatable experiment and things of that nature to verify things. Well, some of this stuff is so beyond that, I think it would be difficult to have that gate met open.
Right. Let me ask you about Adam, because I made a note here. Amazingly, I make notes. It's amazing. So about his particular story, which if you read it, his feelings about the aliens are largely positive. And when I read it twice. The first time I thought, oh, this is really cool. And then I read it a second time again, and I thought, my question when I put down on my notes is, are we being suckered? You know, are they just presenting a positive front to us to get us to do what they want us to do? You know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a valid question, and many people have talked about that. You know, are we being hoodwinked here in some way, shape, or form? The fact is that people's worldview back in I think it was 2009 MUFON paid for a study that I was involved with, that I was in charge of, called the Omega-3 study, which you saw in my book. I printed the whole thing in the book, where we took 71 people that claimed that they had experiences and 51 people as a control group. And we found that these people in neither group had a psychopathology. They were not fantasy prone. Their worldview changed. And they came back with thoughts of, oh, we need to be better stewards of the planet. We need to be better to one another. We need to be more loving. These are very positive things. I don't care if the aliens have a hidden agenda or thing, but if more of us come back with that kind of a feeling, maybe we will stop having wars. Maybe we'll stop spending so much money on the military. Maybe we'll start helping our people and evolve in a much more peaceful way. I think that's the bottom line on that.
That's a very good point. You're absolutely right. Let me ask you about the MILAB thing, speaking of the military. So,
right.
Now, MILAB stands for Military Abductors. So Mm-hmm. What's going on with that? I mean,
well,
you know,
yeah.
And I have to preface this. You're not the only person who talks about this. I mean, there's all sorts of people who say they've been abducted, who they say they run into regular, ordinary human military personnel. You know,
it's very common that besides people talking about the Greys, which are very prevalent, it seems like every group, whether it's the mantises, whether it's the reptilians, whether it's the Nordics, they all use Greys to do their dirty work. There must be a store out there in the universe. You know,
you
go and pick up your iPhone. Well, go pick up your Grey. And oftentimes people, besides seeing the majority of those other entities, they see military people on board the craft. And so there seems to be a connection there. And it's already been documented. This Israeli retired general who wrote a book, his name is Chaim Ashed, talks about the fact that, we've got to deal with them, and they're not going to, you know, out themselves yet because we're not ready. You know, and we got bases on the moon, and we got bases on Mars, and all this kind of stuff that's going on. I think that the military has been involved. They know a hell of a lot more than they're letting on. They want to know, and I think the majority, like the Melinda Leslie talks about her military abductions. Basically, they're interrogating these abductees to find out more information about what's going on. And so this is a way to do it. This is a way to do it.
Right. So, I lost my train of thought there for a second. It just happens. I'm 68, so I'm having, I'm struggling. what do you think is the extent of the military involvement? I mean, I get various things from various military people and defense people. You know, there's two schools of thought on this, and that is, one is that we have these crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, and we've reverse engineered them and did this years and years ago. And then there's another thought that we actually don't know shit. We haven't been able to figure out anything, and they're actually embarrassed to come out and say so. I mean, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I do. Before COVID shut everything down, I had the pleasure of having lunch with Lou Elizondo. And during that luncheon, we talked about the Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
They feel, meaning the organization, the military group, they understand how these things operate. And that was quite a revelation, that they feel that based on certain things, they're able to manipulate time and space and anti-gravity and all of this that enables them to do incredible feats of maneuvering that would normally crush, you know, any human that would be inside the craft. So I think the military does know a hell of a lot more. I mean, you know, Grush came out and said, yeah, we got craft, we got bodies.
Yeah.
They've been at this digging in a hell of a lot longer than any of the other organizations, whether it's MUFON, whether it's OPUS, whether it's anybody, KUFOS, DARCAP, you name it. They've all, have not come up with as much information as I believe our military has.
I'm not going to ask you to betray a personal trust here, but I'm under the distinct impression that Alessandro knows way more than he can talk about.
Definitely. No question about it. He drew on a napkin for me, with arrows and things like that, how these things operate. And he says it doesn't require a large power source, which, because I asked him, I said, well, is it element 115? He says, nope.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, because I just assumed, I mean, there's the, what's the name of the Mexican physicist? I never get his Abercrombie or something like that. I never can remember his name, but he's figured out theoretically how to go faster than the speed of light, but his theory takes an enormous amount of power,
Yeah.
And I kind of got the impression, I've been reading a book by a guy named Bruce Rapuando, who's going to be on the show next week. He's, I thought he was a physicist. He's actually a professional biologist, but the majority of his book deals with the science of how to do this. And it's quite dense. I mean, God bless him. I mean, he made it as simple as he could, but still, I think the average person would have a hard time plowing through it. But he also, he was talking about Bob Lazar's thing of element 115. He also came to the conclusion to be a lot of power. I don't understand how you could do that stuff without a lot of power. But that's because I'm stupid.
Well, believe me, I can't help you with that.
No, you can't. No, you can't help me with stupid last. No. No, you can't at all. No. So what's in the future for Opus here? What are you doing?
Well, I think we just recently updated our website. If you go to opusnetwork.org, which is up here in the top of the screen, you'll find a lot of information there. There's a lot of articles. There's a lot of the interviews that I've done there as well. A lot of good information for people that are looking for assistance. There's a support button that if you're looking for support, there's also a contact button if you want to join us. We're always looking for therapists, licensed therapists, the mental health practitioners, certified the hypnotherapists. We'd love you to go to our YouTube site and hit the subscribe button, because the more people we get, the you know, at some point we'll be able to monetize something. So we're, you know, a nonprofit, so we depend on donations. So, but that's another way to support the cause of what we're doing. My book, The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact, is on Amazon. So
I've been talking up your book for 2 weeks. I mean,
fantastic.
The case studies in there are absolutely fascinating and way beyond the average scenario. And I'm actually going to backtrack a little bit here. I was going to ask you, is there some, have you noticed any commonality between the people who have been abducted? Is there some common thread, either personality wise or their life experience or anything? Have you ever noticed anything?
Yeah, there seems to be commonality, certainly as far as their experiences are concerned. It's very, very common what goes on. As far as their backgrounds are concerned, you know, a lot of people that have had military backgrounds for whatever reason show up. Indigenous peoples here in the United States have seems to be a common thread. As far as personalities are concerned, this is something that We just finished the first phase of the Omega 4 study, which is on our website as well, where we went out to as far as what they're seeing. Okay, so that gives you very detailed information on the types of things that people are exhibiting. So that's something you might want to take a look at as well.
All right, I have a theory I'm going to run by you. I've started to wonder whether the people who have these abduction experiences, or at least have a prominent UFO sighting, are generally non-believers. Sometimes I think that people are exposed to this specifically to change their mind. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I totally believe that. People experience things for a reason, and this is. A lot of people, like in Adam Burns's case, he's a writer. And so they've told him that you need to write books about this. You need to get this information out there. Okay. And so they pick people with specific talents, I guess. In my case, I mean, I've been at this for 30 years now. And every once in a while I say, that's enough. I'm done.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I'm getting out. No way.
Uh-huh.
They won't let me.
Yeah,
I start getting phone calls. I get people like yourself that want to interview me, you know. So, I mean, and it just, the beat goes on. The beat goes on.
So Les, here's a companion question to that. And like you said, there's a lot of different species of aliens. And the things I've tried to point out to my audience is that these, I mean, I call them people, not humans, but people. They're either anywhere from 200 to 10,000 years ahead of us, right? I mean, you get all sorts of people coming from, You know, I mean, we're barely, I, my brother, late brother-in-law used to say we're only 2 weeks out of the trees, you know, and it, you know, he's got a point there. But my point is, or my question is, excuse me, mm-hmm. Do you notice any commonality among the aliens?
In what regard?
I don't know. Like, you know, like the, either, well, we've already talked about the agenda, but, mm-hmm. you know, about like how they conduct themselves, how they fly. I don't know. You have noticed any common thread of anything?
Well, I think it's, you have to look at personalities, and that's part of what we've done in that first phase of, or actually the second phase, which is, hasn't been put out yet, where we talk about the personalities of these entities. You know,
uh-huh.
And so we're going to start getting feedback on that. But there are some that are, have no personality whatsoever. They just do their job. You can't interact with them. Then you have others like the mantis type, which are very kind, loving uh-huh. Entities. And then you have the tall grays, which, you know, seem to be more matter of fact as well. But they communicate with you telepathically. The Nordics, I don't hear a lot about the Nordics as far as, you know, personality type, but they seem to be kind of nondescript in a lot of ways. I haven't heard a lot. Mostly people talk about the mantis and the reptilians. And the reptilians, most of the time, they're badasses.
Yeah, they're basically the Klingons, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I've heard stories about them being loving as well. And so just like, again, we have on this planet here, we got good people and we got bad people. So right between them, you can't categorize them all as being good or all being bad.
Right.
It's a mix.
So I'm going to say emotional response, but specifically, I've heard that a few of the aliens seem to demonstrate a sense of humor, which I don't find that really fascinating, because I've always wondered, is this strictly a human thing? You know, I don't know.
No,
you know?
I've heard that as well. Matter of fact, I read a book just recently called Dogs, God, and UFOs by Maddie Tobias. And she talks about the fact that, in the book, one of her clients, she's a psychotherapist, and talks about the fact that the entity that she was involved with did have a sense of humor. So, I mean,
and conversely, and I think you kind of touched on this, there's a lot of theories the small gray aliens are basically biological robots. Do you buy that? Or
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
Yeah, because
the reason. They're literally like they've been bred not to have a soul, so there's nothing to them.
Well, there's been cases of experiencers interacting with the grays and punching them and ripping body parts off.
no shit, really?
Yeah, and,
oh, God.
And basically not getting much of a reaction out of them.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. That's amazing. That's
mm-hmm.
incredible. Hey, I want to thank you for your time today.
Oh, Jim, thank you. I appreciate it. By the way, I appreciate what you do, because it's people like yourself that are doing podcasts like this that are getting the word out to more and more people. And you're doing this for a reason, too.
Yes, I am.
They're manipulating your butt, too.
They are. They are. And I'm aware of it, too, and I don't care. I'm going along for the ride. I'm not fighting it, you know.
Yeah.
You don't fight the universe, you know.
Exactly.
Beethoven managed it, but I can't. So,
Right.
You know, I hope you can come back again, especially.
Oh, sure.
Well, first of all, if you write another book, but when you finish this Omega 4 study, and we didn't talk about the Omega 3 study, that's in your book.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to, like, we'll talk again. I'll get a comprehensive list of you of links to link to all your stuff, and we'll put up on our blog. But yeah, we want to know when you're done with it, you know.
Sure.
You know, we'll have you on again. I'd like to do that.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get that second phase of the Omega 4 study done this year, which will be significant, I think. I think it'll be quite interesting. So we'll see.
Well, you're doing God's work too, so I really appreciate it. I appreciate you doing that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Les.
All righty.
Take care. We'll see you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I better turn my mic on. I just did. That's Les Velez. He's the chairman and co-founder of the Organization for Paranormal Understanding Support, OPUS for short, the OPUS Network. Now, I'm going to say this right off. You know, I know a lot of, we talked about this in the A block. Some of you are probably laughing at this, and that's your right, and you can do that. If you're one of these people who think you've been abducted and you have no one to talk to, that's exactly why this organization exists. So there are websites at opusnetwork.org. We're going to put, a blog post on our show blog at jimandi.com with these links. And that's exactly why they exist, so that you have somebody to talk to. So if that's you, I would suggest, as far as I can tell, this is a unique organization. I mean, you know, there's a lot of investigative organizations. He named a few of them, MUFON being the most prominent. But I think this is the only one that actually tries to give emotional and mental support to people who say they've been abducted. As you might imagine, going under the assumption this is real, I think it's real, but I know a lot of you don't. But if you're going to go under the assumption that it's real, it would be an extremely traumatic experience. And like we were talking, the people that remember these things, they might be the outliers, because the impression is you're not supposed to. It seems like the aliens are pretty good at wiping your memory. I made the point that there's probably a good number of people who've been abducted multiple times and are completely unaware of it, because they end up on a craft and they get their DNA. You know, I mean, there's a woman, matter of fact, she's actually a member of the board of OPUS. I think her name is Gina Corzano or something like that, who says that basically she claims she's been a breeding machine for the aliens, that basically she keeps getting pregnant first by, human men, you know, she's getting pregnant and she keeps losing her babies. And it turns out that they were taking them. That's what she claims. And that the thing about that phenomena, there's a lot of women who make that claim and their fetuses just disappear. They go to the doctor and they're just not there anymore. And the doctors say, there's no evidence of a miscarriage. No, their fetuses just evaporate. And, well, that doesn't happen, you know. So, I mean, if you want to call that some sort of proof, that kind of proof that something's going on here, I'll let you do that. Because, that's weird. No matter how you look at it, that's just plain weird, you know. Because if you have your body carries scars, and they're very typical if you have a miscarriage, you know. But she claims that she was pregnant, and then all of a sudden she wasn't. And she's also claimed this has happened to her several times. So, I don't know. A lot of crap going on, man. So, you can call me. You can call me at jimandi.com/call. You can call me at 563-999-3435 for the rest of the show here. I got a couple things. And this kind of addresses to what we're talking about. Before we do this, I have to do this. We have a sponsor. Our sponsor is Kong News. So this is the front page of Kong News in real time. And I have to mention that because it actually flipped over while we were broadcasting here. It changes. It updates every 3 hours. Kong News is a news aggregator. They don't actually, they write a few. They do a very few exclusive stories themselves. As a general rule, they take news from 75 different news sources. They go out and grab it every 3 hours, and then their servers and computers organize them into basically a newspaper. And the newspaper is the front page of their website. There are other pages on this website, but it is, for all practical purposes, a one-page website. You're looking at the front page right now. And so I'm just reading it here. This is from hotair.com. Baltimore power couple will get to keep their donor list secret. Okay. Couple other things. Bill Maher scolds Americans struggling with inflation as he praises Biden from his private jet. All right. So This is a long front page. I mean, there's a lot of news on here. You can spend 2-3 hours just reading this. It's free. It's totally free. They do put advertising on this page, but it's totally free. And like I said, it updates every 3 hours. The stories link directly to the stories on their respective websites. As you can, if you look at the top middle section here, tiny little logo in the bottom left, and that logo I recognize is for 100%fedup.com. And those logos are the logos of the websites that provided the story. So if you click on the headline or the photo, you go directly to the story on that website. There's no interstitial pages. There's no ad thing in the middle, none of that crap. The headlines are the headlines from the stories, and the photos are from the stories too. So and they compile this. It's all done on the fly by computers. It's fantastic. I can't, if you're a news junkie, you can't do better than this. You just can't. I mean, I do this constantly. My former employer, I was the editor-in-chief there for 3 years. So, and Jeff Myers coming on tomorrow. He's a publisher and CEO of Cloud News. At any rate, they sponsor this website, and we couldn't be happier to have them because it really complements what we're doing here. So just wanted to show you that because that's part of my job. But it's at conk.com, conk.com, conk.com. Okay? So now what I was going to talk to you about this is just weird, but this is a weird thing that makes some sense. Okay? So, you know, we have a lot of Bigfoot people on the show too. UFOs, Bigfoot, we do this stuff, you know. Occasionally we have a few ghost people. Paranormal is kind of my thing, you know, all right? Okay, so especially the UFO thing because based on my own personal experiences and stuff like that, I'm absolutely convinced that this is a real phenomena. So I try to have people on who are, Les is right. I'm in the same boat he is in. I'm trying to expose the public to these ideas. Okay, so Bigfoot, I don't know what to think about Bigfoot. Now, my friend, the skeptic, he gives me shit about the fact that I don't know what to think because, you know, he thinks it's complete bullshit. And I say, I don't know what to think. And he said, well, you're just straddling the fence. You don't want to offend anybody. But the actual matter is, I mean, if you're going to ask me, I'd say 60-40, Bigfoot's real. But that's not really the question. The question is, what is Bigfoot? Because, okay, we had Stan Gordon on the show about January. He's one of the premier Bigfoot researchers in America. I mean, this guy's famous. I mean, we have Kathleen Martin coming on in April. She is the niece of Betty Hill from Betty and Barney Hill, which was basically the first real documented alien abduction in America. There were supposedly abductions before then. But theirs was the one that was highly documented. They were the first people that were hypnotically regressed to remember it, and there was physical evidence from what happened. So it's the reason. And Kathleen Martin was Betty Hill's niece. Betty Hill has passed now, and she was about 16, 17 years old when this happened. And this basically started her career. She's now a professional UFO writer and investigator. And she also, you heard Les mention Stan Friedman. She wrote several books with Stan. And I'm really curious to talk to her about that because when Stan died in 2018, he was arguably the premier UFO researcher in the world. And he had a lot of credibility because he was a professional and a working nuclear physicist. He was a hard scientist. And he had a lot of credibility. The thing about Bigfoot isn't so much whether Bigfoot's real or not, although that's even highly debated. It's what is it? Because Stan told me, and he's not the only person who told me this, I hear this constantly, that quite a few people have said they've seen Bigfoot disappear right before their eyes. And the weird thing about Bigfoot, I talk about this regularly, but I think this, and it's easy to joke about this too, but it really does bear knowing, and that is, you know, all those Bigfoot shows and the Travel Channel and sort of shit, Exhibition Bigfoot and all that stuff. The funny part is, I joke about this constantly with my friends about this is the only show you can put on television where you can royally fail at your mission and still get renewed. Do they ever find Bigfoot? No, they never find Bigfoot ever. And that the point is, by extension, people who go out looking for Bigfoot never find Bigfoot. It's the people who take their family out to the park for a picnic who see Bigfoot. That's the really, that's a real weird thing about it. You go out looking for Bigfoot, you'll never find Bigfoot, ever. Now, that's not really, there's exceptions to that, supposedly, but as a general rule, no, you won't see Bigfoot. But man, you just stumble in the forest for a hike with your girlfriend, you'll see Bigfoot. Yeah. Now, all the people who see Bigfoot are people who actually aren't looking for Bigfoot, which is really kind of odd. So you see Bigfoot disappear right before their eyes. Stan talks about this truth, too, and that is there's a high correlation to seeing Bigfoot and also UFO sightings in the same area. This is not imagination. It's kind of been statistically confirmed. So, okay, so what's going on? Well, all right, so here's a guy who says, and this is an interesting theory. He says that this is from the Daily Star out of the UK. He says that Sasquatch and Bigfoot, same thing, are human, alien, grizzly bear hybrids. In other words, he says that what's going on here is that the extraterrestrials are taking their own DNA, human DNA, and the DNA of bears and crossing it three times, and you end up with a Bigfoot. And if you stop and think about it, yeah, that kind of makes some sense. It does. You know, what is it? What is a Bigfoot? You know, I mean, there are people who say they've seen UFOs land and Bigfoots come out of them. So how do you explain that? Or the fact, yeah, that a Bigfoot can disappear, you know. There's also people who say they've telepathically spoken to Bigfoot, too. There's that. So, and once again, these people, all right, they may be crazy. That would be your interpretation. But they're not, usually hardly any of them are quote-unquote professional Bigfoot hunters. They're not. They're just people that are just stumbling around the forest, you know. So you're stumbling around the forest, and then you encounter a giant 9-foot being, and then you realize that it's talking to you with its mind, and you're probably just freaking out. First of all, it's large enough to kill me. Secondly, it's talking to me, and its lips aren't moving, and it's talking in English. You know, I mean, it's a weird thing about thought transference, because if you're talking about thought transference, you really don't have to worry about. Or the theory is you don't have to worry about any sort of language interpretation, because the thought ends up in your head in your language. So I don't know. But, you know, the weird thing is this is like one of the most plausible theories I've heard in a long time. That does actually make sense. If you crossed an alien and a human and a grizzly bear, you'd get a Bigfoot. That's exactly what you'd get. And so I don't know. I thought, well, that's interesting, you know. So I'm going to end with this tonight. John Nolte wrote about this on Breitbart.com about the fact that there's a study in Finland that's been done about people who like woke ideology, and has come to the conclusion that people that embrace woke ideology are significantly less happy than the regular population. And also the other thing that came out of the study, and God, I hate to address this, but I think you have to, and Nolte addressed it very comically in the article, and that is, and they used, I'm not going to get into this, I tell you what, I'm going to put this on our blog too, because the thing is, they used examples of what woke ideology is, and I thought the examples were pretty well, pretty standard, or I did not think they were stretching anything. But their conclusion based on the survey, I think they surveyed 6,000 people in Finland, and that is 60% of women that they in the survey sample said they basically believed in woke ideology, these woke ideas, but only 15% of the men did. You know, we've talked about this before, and because it's sexist to the point where it's misogynistic, but liberalism is driven by feminine ideas. That's all there's. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out. You know, it's like, I mean, yeah, they got men strangling along. I was one of them. I'm a former liberal. You know, I just came to the conclusion. My conversion was very slow over a 10-15 year period. I was not one of these people. I mean, I've talked to people who said they literally they got something hit them in the head, an idea like a brick, and all of a sudden they were thinking differently. That wasn't me. But I did come to the conclusion, partly with studying economics. I do not think an economist will tell you this too, that you can't study formal economics without coming to the conclusion at some point that liberal fiscal policy simply doesn't work. So you're wondering what's happening in all these blue cities and all this shit breaking down, or California, which is inevitably going to have to declare bankruptcy. California will go bankrupt. You just can't do this, sustain this. The federal government of the United States is eventually going to go bankrupt unless we don't turn something around really quick. And there won't be anybody to bail us out. If California goes bankrupt, I mean, they will probably try to time it to a Democratic presidential administration, so they will get bailed out. The federal government will bail them out. There'll be no one to bail the federal government out if we go bankrupt. And the thing is, that is not the federal government is not due solely to liberals. I mean, it's basically, you've got liberals or Republicans and Democrats have contributed to that more or less equally. And it's sinful. It's terrible. We spend way more money every year in this country than we actually have. And so now the federal deficit, the federal debt is $34 trillion. The federal deficit, I think, for this year is going to be something like $1.4 trillion, if I'm right. I get all these and everyone gets these figures confused. The debt is the accumulated amount. The deficit is the annual shortfall of the money we don't have. In other words, that's the amount we're spending more than the money we actually have on hand. That's the difference between the debt and the deficit. And politicians like to throw these numbers out interchangeably because they know you don't know the difference, that you're confused. But there is a distinct difference. We are $34 trillion in debt. And right now, we've crossed the threshold right now where the service on that debt is now, how does this work? It's now greater than 100% of our GDP. So, and that's a folly. That's crazy shit. You know, so we just can't do this and expect nothing bad to happen in the future. I mean, and the problem is when it does happen, it'll probably be catastrophic. Turn this around. Now, there's no reason the federal government has to have no debt, but what we're not managing it right now. It's out of control. So, at any rate, I brought that up is because that was one of several reasons I am no longer a liberal. So I understand the thinking here, you know. Liberalism is basically driven by women, and basically they drag men along with them. That's basically what's going on. And I know that's a really sexist way to put that, but unfortunately it's true. So this study in Finland, yeah, they basically showed that the vast majority of people who buy woke ideology are women, according to the survey. The vast majority. So, and yeah, and they're unhappy. Jesus, who would have thunk that? Really? You're unhappy, huh? That's too bad. I'm terrible. I'm awful. All right. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up for tonight. So I want to thank you for watching. I want to thank Les Velez for joining us. We're going to have all the links to all his stuff on our blog by tomorrow morning. That's Wednesday morning. Tomorrow is our 99th show. We're having the dynamic duo, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell and Jeff Meyer will be joining us. We're taking Thursday off, and then next Monday is our 100th show with Murray Sabrin and a whole bunch of other people. So that's just coming next Monday. So I hope I see you tomorrow. I want to thank you for watching. I love doing this. It's a blast. So I want to thank you for watching very much. Good night, Uncle Donnie. Good night, Esperanza. To you, wherever you are. I'll see you tomorrow night.